And welcome to minute 121 of season 3 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Jeanette Ward of the Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome to the show, Jeanette.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. And let me just say off the top, I understand the honor I have been granted of these few minutes, in particular this minute and then the next four. I could not be happier. These are some of the best minutes of the movie. I'm very excited to be here. Can't wait to talk about them.
So that's what this is all about?
Yes.
I'm actually, once again, surprised we're at the two-hour point of this minute. You know, we don't have that much more to go. We got 12 minutes left of this movie, unfortunately. But we'll have something else next season. You know, which we'll start right after. So, you know, there's nothing to be too upset about. We finish one movie and we immediately start the next one. And then we finish that one and we'll start the next one. You know, that's the plan. That is the plan. Yeah. Well, I don't like the lag in between seasons because, you know, if you lag in between seasons, you lose the momentum. I like having the momentum.
Right. That's right.
And this way my listeners don't have to say, oh, do I have to wait another few months to listen again? Or I can't believe that I have to come back tomorrow and listen to me. I don't know. It depends on how they want to look at it, you know. So minute 121 begins with John slowly moving forward as sparks fly all around him and ends with John lowering his gun. So we finish things off on Friday with John seeing that he has two bullets, and then he starts walking and he knocks out Christoph. And then he's starting to come into the vault itself and starts screaming, Hans, Hans. It's like he's like screeching as he's doing it. It's just it's great. He's like whining. Are you familiar? Are you familiar with the Saturday Night Live skits from the 80s, the whiners? With Joe Piscopo, and I don't remember who played the woman, but it was like,
I haven't thought about that in a number of years.
We're Doug and Wendy Weiner. I haven't either. I just thought of it because I was whining, or John is whining.
I didn't view John's call here as a whine. I viewed it as it's a final call to battle. It is a signal of both. He's at the end of his rope. He's throwing everything into his last ditch plan here. This is it. This is it. All comes down to this, and it is much less a whine than it is a guttural growl of, this is all I have left. Hans! This is it! We're doing it!
Yeah. Definitely. Especially since he's dispatched with just about everybody. You know. And even at this point, John doesn't know how many terrorists there are. That's the best thing about this. It's not as if there was at one point where he saw everybody and said, okay, I got... I'm going to test you, just like I test everyone. How many terrorists are there?
Well, the answer is between 30 and 40.
No, terrorists, not hostages. Not hostages.
10-ish. Because I should. You can count them when they come out of the van in the beginning, and you know I don't. And I could try running down the list of them. That's not going to work either. And in this minute, you have Hans, and who I've always referred to as not Huey Lewis.
That's correct.
Couldn't tell you that dude's name. I don't know the actor.
It's Eddie. It's Eddie.
He's not Huey Lewis.
But that's great that everyone thinks he's Huey Lewis. You know, one of my guests months ago is a documentary director, Kurt, I always forget how to pronounce his last name. Kurt Kenny. I think it's pronounced, spelled K-E-U-N-N-E. So I think it's Kurt Kenny. And he has been following Huey Lewis around for like 3 years doing a documentary about him. And it was just so amazing having him on the show and him pointing that out to me, you know, that Huey Lewis, and he even brought up the fact that Eddie looks like Huey Lewis. And I'm like, this is a guy who personally knows Huey Lewis. It's not even someone who, you know, who it's not like the rest of us who just look at him and say, okay, he's got the Huey Lewis 80s look, you know, except for in Back to the Future where his hair is, you know, slicked down.
Look like Huey Lewis. That's the only time Huey Lewis doesn't look like Huey Lewis. Yeah. And this poor guy, Eddie, constantly and since 1988 have simply referred to him as not Huey Lewis.
That's right. All right. Let me test you on something else then. So when John shows up at Nakatomi and he looks at the first guard, who's that first guard remind you of? The guy who's sitting at the counter and tells him that the computer's so smart, if you need to find your zipper.
If you did, it'll help you. Yeah, if you gotta take a piss, it'll help you find your zipper.
Does he look like someone from the 80s that you would think of? I
He
brought this up
does,
so
but
many
he looks
times,
like
and
every dude from Chicago from the 80s.
are you looking at him right now? Are you looking at
No,
oh, okay, I
I
thought you
was
were.
just thinking of.
Oh,
Just
okay.
looking up.
I thought you like scrolled back, and
That's my. This is where I look when I'm considering.
all
I feel like he looks like a guy from one of the Bears sketches.
right. No, he doesn't have a mustache. The other guy does. The
The other guy, the guy in the hallway.
second one who gets shot, when
The
that little puck
Flash
explodes,
Bang
exactly.
Brigade guy.
That's right. He looks like he's from that. They're right, the Bears. Doubles.
That's who I'm thinking.
Yeah, no.
Thinking
But
of.
so the first guy looks to me like John Larroquette.
Oh, sure, of course.
Yeah.
Oh
So
boy. See?
yeah.
Don't bring that
And
up now. That's all I'm going to
I
think
can
about.
bring it up now. This guy's been dead for almost 2 hours. And I can still talk about him.
Okay, yeah.
Still talk about the way he is. Okay. So I mean, John starts walking and he just he's moving slowly, dragging his foot behind him, obviously. Finally, the rest of the time he's got his injured foot, but he's still able to walk normally. Now he's dragging it. I guess maybe because he had to put it up against the glass last week or something like that,
Actually showing some signs of injury.
Yeah, exactly. And he just looks like a mess. There's
But here's the question: is that performative on some level to allow Hans to believe he has the upper hand, that John has absolutely nothing left? Is the limp, is the covered in grime, is the guttural scream, is all of that performative?
That is a great question. I think first of all, I think the grime is not. Okay, the
No,
grime.
that
Okay.
grime, that the tank top, the mystical tank top,
It's not a
the
tank
beginning
top.
white,
It's an A shirt.
eighth wife beater.
There you go, wife beater. We talked all about that. Yeah.
It starts out white and then you just ends up
I didn't say
like
white beater. I said wife beater.
ends up, yeah, it just the most glorious shade of grime soaked brown,
Actually,
which makes
is he
sense.
even still wearing a shirt? I think he's no longer wearing a
Oh
shirt.
no, at this point the shirt has disappeared. He's no
Yeah,
longer wearing a shirt,
it's
but that shirt does
disintegrated.
contain. So yes, all yeah, honestly, I believe it. Between the fire, the explosions, the jumping, he's coated in so much crap at this point. But
Actually,
it's
didn't he? I think he ripped off his shirt to wrap his foot. I think that's what he
Oh.
did. They never showed us him doing that, but I think that is what he did.
It would be logical. And so listen, the limp we know is makes sense. His foot is clearly injured. The slow crawl of a walk down the hallway makes sense. We know he struggled a lot. The holding the large automated weapon,
That's an MP5.
he's walking into this situation with a last ditch plan in his head to save his wife and to end this
Is
situation
a
and take
strange
out
wife.
his estranged wife. But and we know he's certainly suffering, but I just wonder if he's maybe turned the volume up on all of it to allow Hans to get a little bit overconfident. Because at this point, everything is still, while things have kind of fallen apart for Hans and his crew, everything is still kind of going his way. He thinks Theo is down there in the basement getting the getaway car ready, and he's got not Huey Lewis with him. He's got his pile of money. In theory, he's thinking he's still got this, and now here's his last enemy. Limping, clearly beaten, bruised, bloodied, nothing left. He feels like he has the upper hand. So maybe it's all, it's not all an act, but a lot of it could be an act.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, first of all, I didn't answer the question from before about how many terrorists there are. There are 13 terrorists. Okay.
13.
And there are four left alive. Okay.
I there's
We have
he's
Theo unconscious in the ambulance. We have Christoph unconscious on the floor in the vault. And then we have not Huey Lewis, Eddie, and Hans. Hans Gruber. Those are the four that are left alive.
Okay, so that makes sense. And Theo doesn't count because he's already unconscious.
And so is Christoph. And
So Christoph also does
I find
not.
it really funny. I mean, I talked about this on Friday with Heather, that it's really funny that It happens in the same minute that the two of them get knocked out.
It makes me wonder
Here you have
that
a movie
those
that's
two.
132 minutes, and one of the minutes has two of the terrorists get knocked out. I don't think there's the
Are
only other time that something happens to two terrorists in the same minute is when, Alexander and James both get disintegrated from the chair bomb. But
right.
everyone else, their deaths are all spread out through the rest of the movie.
And so are these two, Theo and Christoph, the only two to make it through the movie alive, and we assume end up in custody?
Yes.
All right, there you go.
That we assume. I mean, apparently that
Have you
one
ever
of
thought
the
about that before, that at some point Theo is sitting in a jail cell, ruining the day he agreed to take a job for Hans Gruber?
That's right. That's right. And what I actually just read, I think today, that one of the stuntmen that was used as or one of the actors that was used as one of the terrorists, the day that his character died, he wasn't able to be on the set, so they had a stuntman play him. So he said he's actually not dead. His character is not really dead, and therefore,
That's a
and
stretch,
therefore,
buddy.
yeah,
That's a stretch.
exactly. Well, it is his only claim to fame, the
All
fact
right,
that he
on.
was the fact that he was in Die Hard and got stitched through the abdomen by John. So, what can I tell you?
Oh,
So
fantastic.
what do you think?
Well,
Do you think John is just overacting here?
I think that he's certainly playing it up in order to allow Hans, because if Hans gets overconfident, it plays to John's favor.
So
His
this is
plan.
back to John using his street smarts.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go
Because
in, give the
what's the
fake
play of
out.
John McClane? An everyday hero, a relatable, why Die Hard works, right? And I'm sure you've talked about this over and over again, but this movie easily, in my opinion, and in I think the AFI's opinion, the best action movie ever made.
Yeah, for sure. Mine too.
Easily.
So there you go.
Easily one of the best movies ever made. And it's because it rises above, especially at that time, a lot of the other 80s action movies, because you have a center, a lead that's kind of more of an everyman. Like, this is a guy who didn't want to be there, wasn't happy about the situation, having in general kind of a bad day, gets stuck in a situation, does his best to solve the problem at hand. And I feel like that is what makes this movie, that's one of the reasons this movie is so great. The other is that every single piece of it fits together perfectly. The performances are exceptional. The cast is perfect. And nothing is wasted. You watch movies a lot where there'll be this or that or this, and it never comes back again. Everything in this movie, down to the calendar of topless ladies, comes back around
Yes.
and helps you either identify a location in the building or remember the flow of characters, or remember who is who and where everybody is, and so every little thing comes back. And I think that this movie, this minute in particular, you start to see that. And we could talk about it a little bit more, I think, tomorrow or maybe the day after. But every little aspect of this comes back, and in this case, in particular, the Christmas tape.
Yes.
Because it's a movie that doesn't have to hit you over the head with exposition. It does a lot visually. Right, because we saw him look and see the Christmas. Sorry, babe. See the Christmas tape sitting there, and so we kind of have an idea what he's going to do, and then we see that play out. So, such a good movie,
And there are
such a
tons of
great,
things. I
and
mean,
because.
if I were to go back and make a list of all the things that I've discussed over these last 120 episodes of things that have come back, it's
Things that have come
amazing.
back,
I mean,
and not been wasted, and.
even 2 weeks ago when John wrapped the chain around Carl's neck, okay, we see that chain earlier in the movie. It's there, and it's not just, it's giving us an idea of where this location is, like you said, and it's also something that's going to be used later. The whole idea of, Chekhov's gun and stuff like that. This movie has so many different Chekhov's things.
The craftsmanship
I
of
mean,
this
again, we're
movie,
going to talk about later this week, Chekhov's watch. It's all connected.
it is exceptionally crafted on a level that you didn't see before, and you don't really see after.
That's
This
right.
movie is very well done.
Right. And as
Also,
much as I
that
love.
plays to what I think that John is a character who every advantage he can pull will. And he's already met Hans at this point, like face to face, and has formed an opinion of him. Maybe done some criminal profiling and knows that if he can feed into Hans's ego, let Hans believe he has the upper hand, really play into that. I mean, he's clearly hurting. He doesn't have to sell that real hard. But if he can amp that up and let Hans believe, like, well, this guy's got no chance now. He knows it'll work to his advantage. So yes, I think some of it on some level is performative in order to gain the upper hand.
Okay, that's completely fair. I mean, one of the things that you mentioned that John, is already familiar with Hans. So one of the theories that we came up with throughout the doing this movie was when we were talking about when he was Bill Clay. Okay, like
Yes.
why would he use the name Bill Clay? So we came to the assumption that Bill Clay was their inside man, and he's the one who gave them all the information, and therefore
Interesting.
Hans killed him. He's probably in Theo's trunk. Okay, in front of the building, because therefore Hans was when he said his name is Bill Clay, okay, he was taking a chance that John maybe had met Bill Clay, but the odds were if is because he knows that who Bill Clay is. So, some nice
Interesting.
theories,
Interesting.
fan fiction, I
Yeah.
guess you can say.
I like it.
Yeah.
I also, just in this particular minute, too, because you mentioned it starts with John walking in and you've got the sparks coming down and it's dimly lit and John's kind of backlit and there's flaming bits of everything just kind of drifting. The set design on this movie, which I'm sure you discussed, beautiful. It just looks fantastic. And to the point where by this point in the movie, and again, because nothing is wasted, the audience feels like they know the layout of Nakatomi Tower. You know which floors are and the layout of the floors and what's happening and where things are. It's really well done. And this scene in particular, the way it's lit, the way it's shot, the way things are happening in the background, it's beautiful.
There's no question about it. I mean, it was completely done amazingly. I mean, the movie was nominated for 4 Oscars. Okay, it didn't win any of them. Okay, it was nominated for Best Sound, Best Film Editing, Best Sound Effects Editing, and Best Visual Effects, which we'll get to later this week when we talk about some of those. But unfortunately, it lost every one of them. Some more
Sorry, I didn't
deserving
nod
than
or just be
others.
nominated.
Apparently, that's all they can say here. That's for sure.
I do the other thing I do want to mention about this minute in particular is this is the minute where Hans explains his whole, not his whole plan, but basically the summary of his plan. Like,
Well, no,
they
this is when he
steal
explains it to John. It's already been
EYI.
explained to everyone else. But we'll get there. We'll get there. So the first thing is that Holly then sees the way John looks, and her response is, Jesus. And I
Well, he
love
doesn't look great. Doesn't
and
look great.
but hey, this is what's bringing her back to him, or bringing him back to her, whatever you can say, whatever you want to look at it. And I
Well,
love his response
she
where he
realizes,
goes,
like, number one, he looks terrible, but number two, she begins to realize what he has gone through to get to her.
right, that's true. And I mean, obviously his response to her is going to be snappy because th this is the movie with snappy comebacks. And he goes, "Hi, honey."
Very
Exactly.
quippy. Very quippy. But again,
And
even that whip it serves to keep Hans off balance.
right. Yeah. And as he's walking, we see that Hans starts moving backwards as he's like trying to keep to have a greater distance between the two of them, and he uses Holly as a shield and then puts the gun to her head, which, as we know, he'll use it if he needs to. He's not
It's
someone who's going to be shying away. And at the same time, we see Eddie slash not Huey Lewis
not Huey Lewis.
walk towards the other side of the room, which is
Right, because he
great.
wants to get out of the way because he knows nothing's greater than the power of love.
That is true.
If I can work other Huey Lewis songs.
Why not? But you said the greatest power of love. You're mixing two different songs together there.
Oh boy, all
You just have to
right.
say the power of love. No, but
I
also
do.
he
He
also sees
also
where his
is.
gun is. He sees where his gun is.
He's moving towards this weapon. I do want to talk about Bonnie Bedelia. Bedelia? Just the fact that. And I. in all the times I've watched the behind the scenes of this movie, the fact that Holly in this movie operates top to bottom as if someone who she's frustrated with her estranged husband, but also is such a strong character through this movie in and of itself, in that she does behave like a cop's wife throughout the from the start. She knows not to reveal her connection to John through this movie, not to let the terrorists have any information, to take charge, to step up and to start negotiating with them when necessary. And even in this moment, seeing him, recognizing how terribly he looks, not visibly falling apart or becoming rattled, knowing, and we don't know if she
And her 80s
knows.
hairstyle stays in place.
I don't know if you remember, but hairspray in that time
Yeah, I
did
know.
not fit.
I do. I do. I do.
But she clearly understands that he has a plan, even if she has no idea what it is, and she keeps her eyes on John in order to be ready for whatever comes next. And I really appreciate, again, the way the character's written, but the way the character's performed. There's kind of the dual level in this movie for everybody, and she does such a great job.
Okay, I mean it makes sense. I mean she does a great job. This is one of her best performances. There's no question about that. She's had a few others. I mean she was also great in Presumed Innocent, but she was more of she was played as a background character in Presumed Innocent. We'll put it that. We'll leave it at that. You know, I don't want to as a much more of a supporting role. Here she's less of a supporting role because she's so
She's like one of
prominent.
the leads.
That's right, because she's so prominent, especially when no one else, when everyone else knows that they can't trust Ellis. You know, she's the one
Well,
who
and I
was.
will say, as a female fan of action movies in the 80s, it could often be very rough. You don't get a ton of strong female characters, and certainly not one who's ready to step aside when needed, but also, like, she steps up in this movie. She's fantastic.
Right,
So,
she's no Ellen Ripley, but she still does a great job here.
yes, somewhere between Ellen Ripley and Erica Eleniak in Under Siege.
Okay, that's you've gone into the 90s, but okay, that's fine. We'll give you a
Well,
little bit
yes.
of it's not just 80s, you know.
Early 90s.
Yeah, early 90s, sure. 92, come on. So it's still
All right. Anyway.
All right.
Anyway.
So John walks into the room and then we get like a great shot showing the triangulation of the three of them, of Eddie, Hans, and John. You know, which really makes it look like this is going to be a Mexican standoff. You know, which is done really, really well. You know, the way that they're all keeping their distances, and I mean, I didn't measure it, but it does look like they're all equidistant of one another.
Yes.
You know,
And
whether.
it's another reminder that these are not your average everyday run-of-the-mill thugs. Like, these are highly trained, very specialized terrorists, thieves who are well trained and ready for this plan, and that John is doing his best to keep up with them. He is kind of outmatched and outclassed by these guys every step of the way, and that is another reason he's incredibly relatable and a great action hero star.
Right. Well, that's also one of the reasons why the movie also works because it's he's using his street smarts against their I guess you can say professional smarts.
Yes, training and money and yes.
So John, at this point, as you mentioned earlier, figures out the plan and he goes, "So that's what this is all about. F-ing robbery." And I like the fact that he figures it out immediately. He's in the vault. He's looking around. He sees all the bags filled with the bearer bonds, which last week Heather and I also talked about the fact that bearer bonds were very popular in 80s movies.
Very popular, yeah, and
You know,
never figured that out. But hey, whatever.
well, no, it has to do with the fact that bearer bonds, you anyone if you're holding them, you can cash them. That's what it comes down to. You don't need to bring any proof of who you are.
There you
You know,
go.
here, I got a bearer bond. Okay, great. I'll cash it in for you. Here's
What
$100,000.
I like about this is the fact that the way John says a robbery is to attempt to insult Hans and to bring him down, like a robbery is so beneath you. It's
Exactly.
so, yeah, which of
I
course
was
doesn't work
expecting
because,
more from you. You know, I wasn't expecting you to be just this dumb schmuck doing a robbery. And the whole idea is to keep him keep Hans as off balance as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, to play into Hans's hand to make Hans feel overconfident.
And then Hans continues to threaten Holly, and
Yeah.
hoping that John will I don't again I was about to say, hoping that John will call his bluff, but Hans is willing to shoot her if he needs to, for his own
Yeah,
survival,
I think for
but he still
Hans, in
wants
the
to
same
use
way
her
that
as a pawn here.
John is trying to make Hans feel overconfident, and I think that Hans is trying to make John feel emotional and off balance.
Right. Which John could theoretically say, oh, well, you know what? She left me 6 months ago. I don't care. Shoot her. I don't need her. And so Hans then says to him, put down the gun. And then John continues to chat him up. And he goes, why'd you have to nuke the whole building, Hans? He's still finding ways he's fishing for information, but at the same time, trying to keep Hans off balance.
Yes.
First of all, I love the fact that he says, well, you have to nuke the whole building. What do you what when someone uses the word nuke, where do you go with that?
The ultimate destruction that there is absolutely nothing left in any case.
Right. Okay. Do you know when it started to be used?
No.
As a verb, even. Okay, so obviously nuke is short for nuclear weapons, or for a nuclear holocaust or whatever. So the use of it as a verb was actually started in 1962, when they would say someone would nuke, they would nuke you. In 1987, which is just the year before this movie came out, it began to be used for if you're cooking something in a microwave oven.
Sure, that
I'm
makes
gonna
sense.
nuke my leftovers or whatever you want to call it. All right. So, but the word nuclear goes all the way back to 1841. Okay, where it was used as a scientific term for the nucleus of a cell, and it came from the French word. Again, I don't know how to pronounce French very well, so forgive me, all those French speakers out there. But it's nucléaire. I'm just gonna. Say it with a little bit of an accent. It is spelled a little differently. It's NUCLE what do you call an E with apostrophe over
Accent
it?
aigu.
Exactly.
Accent aigu.
There you go. AIRE. Okay, which basically means that it was the central, it's the center part of something. Okay, in 1914 they started using it as the nucleus of an atom. And in 1945, when they started talking about nuclear reactions, so therefore the word nuclear started being used.
I do. I'm the. I've heard it used in terms of a microwave, but it does now that in this discussion, it seems a very odd way to use it to nuke something in a microwave.
Right. The term nuclear energy started being used in 1930, nuclear physics in 1933, nuclear war in 1954. Nuclear winter was actually coined by a scientist named Richard Turco, but it wasn't used until 1983 by Carl Sagan, who was quoting him. So nobody knows exactly when Richard Turco said that, whatever. Now the and then you have nuclear family, which was started to be used in 1949 when they were talking about the social structure. The anthropologist named G.P. Murdoch started using that term. So yeah, it has a lot of different meanings, but as you said, this is not the first place I would go when I'm, I wouldn't say you blew up the building. I wouldn't necessarily say when you nuked the building or whatever.
I think it might be another. I mean, you could do a deep dive into the fact that, right, Hans is German, and maybe he's using that as another weapon to try and throw Hans off balance. And I don't know. It may simply just be that it was commonplace term at the time to talk about complete and utter destruction. In any case.
Right. Now, the rest of the minute is Hans doing his best impression of a James Bond villain and basically
Yes.
explaining, to not just to John, but also to us, if we didn't catch yet what his plan is, now we know what it is.
Yeah. Well, and it's such a good explanation too. When you steal $600, you can just disappear. When you steal $600 million, they will look for you,
They will
unless they
find
think
you.
you're already
They
dead.
will find you.
Yeah, what a perfect explanation for exactly what he was doing, the plan, the wiring, the roof of the building. It all makes sense.
Okay, but except for one thing. Now, the building has blown up. He blew up the roof as he wanted to blow up. Okay? You would think, especially post 9/11, okay, if the idea is to blow up a building, you would want the entire building to be demolished. Okay? So that they wouldn't even notice necessarily that the floor with the vault, which is only 4 or 5 floors below the roof, it should be completely demolished, but they're still there.
Well, that's an interesting question, right? Because you're right, he just did the ro roof, but he knew because he was going to have the helicopter land on the roof. That's a good
No, but
question.
how much rubble is on the roof that they're gonna, how
Well, if
long
you
will it
blow up
take
the
it?
roof, how many floors
That's right,
collapse when you blow up the
but
roof?
that's my point. Even if 4 floors collapsed, okay. They'll have to sift through all the rubble, but they're going to expect to find Barabans there. They're going to expect to find more bodies than just the hostages there. You'd think that Hans would have like strewn around some of the Barabans up there also. Which they never
I think
showed
he
us.
did.
They never showed us that he did that, so we don't know if he did or didn't.
That's a good point.
Whatever. It's out of love for this movie, not from any other place. I'm
Well,
trying to
he
help
didn't
make
leave anything
Hans's
else
plan
to
better.
chance. I have to believe that he had a plan for that as well. That maybe he didn't explain it in this minute, but surely he considered that.
And I mean, as he's talking, it's really funny as Hans is talking. So we see like flaming papers, flying past his head, as he once again continues to, jam his gun into Holly's face,
Into her temple.
exactly. And John is, we see he's looking on a, what's he supposed to do? We know what his plan is because we know what's going to happen over the next, few minutes. But when John is doing this, he's in this point, he is faking out, trying to fake out Hans by showing that, okay, I'm ready to actually, should I give up or shouldn't I give up? Even though he knows that he's going to drop this gun because, this gun is useless for him except for as a prop. And then the minute ends as we see John starting to lower his gun down a little bit. But
Yes.
we don't.
Again, playing into Hans's
Yes.
hands.
Correct.
Hans's hands.
So, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Let me consult my notes.
And
No.
what do your notes tell you?
My notes tell me that this is where John begins to enact his final plan. He's
Okay.
beaten, he's bruised, he's at the end of his wits. And not Huey Lewis moves closer to his weapon. And then Hans explaining the plan, which I really like. I mean, while we all kind of had an idea of what his plan was, and we got it, this to have him clearly explain, no, this is what I'm doing. Love it. And then the set again, I just think it's fantastic. So,
And again,
yeah,
they
that's
now
the end
only
of
have to
my.
split it between 4 people instead of
Exactly.
13.
Like Hans not complaining, and I personally believe that he didn't really have an extensive prior connection with any of these folks. Like he assembled this team for this job, so he's not crying when they start getting knocked
Right,
off.
exactly. Except for his lack of, stability throughout. But beyond that,
Yeah.
no, for sure. I mean,
Yeah.
maybe we're assuming that he knows Carl and maybe Theo from somewhere else, but
Maybe.
even they don't know the whole plan. I've talked about this a
Correct.
lot.
And they don't know each other.
That's right. He's compartmentalized everything here.
Yeah.
Hans is the only one who knows the whole plan.
Correct. Yep. Yeah.
Even Carl was shocked when he starts talking about Asian Dawn and
Agent
Asian
Dawn.
Dawn. I read about them in on what do you say? I read about them in Time magazine. But and Theo didn't know how he's going to get the seventh lock open. And I've said this before. If I was in Theo's job and I'm there to break through six locks, and the person in charge doesn't tell me how they're going to get through the seventh lock, I don't think I would take the job. And in the end, as we know, as you mentioned earlier today, Theo is the only one sitting in jail. So, or
That's right.
Theo and Christoph. So, but everyone forgets Christoph is there. And
I forgot about Christoph.
he was just knocked out, on Friday.
Hashtag remember Christoph.
Yeah. So the script just has a few minor discrepancies. One of the things is that instead of Holly screaming Jesus, she goes John, and then his response is Holly, we have to stop meeting like this, instead of hi, honey.
Oh, yeah, you know what? That's equally as quippy, but I prefer the hi,
Yeah.
honey. I think it's a little more. We have to stop meeting like this would have been a little like, come on, dude. But no, the hi, honey. I like that better. So I agree with that
Yeah, for
change.
sure. So do I. I've agreed with most of the changes. There are very few things in this movie where the script, the parts of the script that were changed are better than what they did in the movie. There are a few, but not many.
Do you
Overall,
know, was the script pulled from the book? Did you ever read the
yes,
book?
I did. And the script, well, we'll get into that later this week about some of the differences between the book and the movie. But the book, basically, he's a retired cop who's in his
Yeah.
60s and he's visiting his daughter. He's not visiting his wife.
Yeah, I didn't care for the book, honestly.
Okay. Well, I read it in 1988. That was the first time I read it, and I've
Oh,
skimmed it. I've skimmed it recently.
it's been years since I read it,
Yeah.
but I remember thinking like, you know what, the movie's better.
Well, of course. Come on. But the book does have the whole thing with the bare feet. The scriptwriter didn't need to, Jeb Stuart or didn't need to think of that on his own.
Yeah, they made the right call.
Yeah.
They made the right changes. They used the bones of a really good story and then made it more
Yes.
visual. And I cannot argue with
Nope.
that. I really
Neither
can't.
can I. Neither can I. So the other changes in the script here is when Hans talks about when his plan, he goes, when you steal $600, you can disappear, but when you steal 600 million, they will find you unless you play dead. That's what he says. Instead of already dead, but so much better that it was already dead. And then it says he tightly smiles and then says, which happens to be your next role, drop the gun, please.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Too
No,
much.
I'm glad that's not there.
Too much. Too much. So yeah, that's basically the only things we have in the script there. So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guests will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger films. So Jeanette, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work
We
your
and
way up.
again, what a testament to how great the movie Die Hard is that for years afterwards, and I would say to this day, scripts are still sold on the fact, well, it's Die Hard Inna or Die Hard Meets.
Yes.
The movie was so good it became its own
That is
genre.
correct.
So
But
for me, and
unfortunately, I can't think of any movie that has been able to match it, though. There are some that have come close, but nothing has matched it. So yeah.
I would say that the one I have for number one comes
Okay,
close. And
we'll
now
get there.
I may have cheated in the middle of this list. But starting with number
Okay.
five, and I like that I came up with these options simply by Googling movies that are like Die Hard.
Okay, there you go.
And you get a whole list of things that you can choose from. Because I was like, God, there's so many. How do I narrow this down? And what I learned after putting together this list is that I really enjoy movies that are Die Hard on a plane, apparently.
Yes.
Number five for me is Air Force One.
Okay.
And it's Die Hard on a plane, but with the president, I think is what I would call it. And I think the reason I like Air Force One is, again, the performances. When you have a great action movie, really the puzzle pieces for a great action movie are a great set, good action set pieces, and a cast that can elevate basic materials. You don't have to have an incredible script for a good action movie, but what you need are actors who can elevate a good script to great
Correct.
performances. And I think that between Harrison Ford and Gary Oldman, both of them carry that movie off really fantastically. So I really like Air Force One, number five.
Okay.
Number four, Die Hard on a Plane, Executive Decision,
Ooh, that's a great one also.
1996. Sold itself as a Steven Seagal movie, but pulled a quick change into a Kurt Russell action movie, which I appreciate even
Well,
more.
I love the fact that I mean the movie itself is fun, but I'm not the biggest Steven Seagal fan, so I love the fact that he dies like 20 minutes into the movie. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it's
Sorry.
I really like it. And what this putting together this list did for me is make me want to like I need to go back and rewatch a bunch of these.
Yeah.
So yeah, Air Force One executive decision both on plane. And then we get to number three, and this might be a cheat. I did put Die Hard with a Vengeance. I
Okay.
don't know that that's allowed,
Other people
but
have used other Die Hard movies, so that's fine.
I really like I and I'm a person who I don't mind number two, which could be Die Hard on a plane. But I really like number three, and I think it's the adding Sam Jackson is a good counterpoint to John McClane tends to be a contained every man like this day kind of hero, and Sam Jackson is big, and when you put that next to him, I think that really works. I like that dichotomy. I really enjoyed having the two Hodge brothers at the beginning. Aldous and Edwin Hodge playing the two kids. Love it.
So in other words, you're
And
going to
you
want to come
just
back when I do Die Hard 3.
Yes, absolutely. I would love to.
But not Die Hard 2.
Jeremy Irons. I don't mind being there for Die Hard 2 either. I give you the Robert Patrick minutes. I enjoy the you cannot and we'll talk about this, but you cannot Alan Rickman is it's it. Right. You can't do better than that. But Jeremy Irons is great, and he does a really good job. So, yes, Die Hard
Okay.
3, number 3. Moving up to number 2, Die Hard on a Plane, Passenger 57.
Is
I
there a
enjoy
theme
Passenger
here?
57. Yeah, apparently. And I didn't realize that until I started putting it together. Because Con Air is the one that didn't make the list, and so
Oh,
that's still
Jay
awkward.
and Mark are going to be upset at you on that one.
I
I
know.
don't think you're. It's a good thing you're already on their show. No.
Right, exactly. But yeah, I that one is so quotable too. When I think Bruce Payne plays the
Yeah.
villain, and when he comes into the cockpit, and the who's in charge? I am. Bang. Who's in charge? You are.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, that's fantastic. And the iconic line of always bet on black. You can't beat that. Wesley Snipes. There are several really great Wesley Snipes action movies. That Drop Zone's my favorite, and The Art of War is good, but man, Passenger 57 is kind of,
Yeah,
yeah,
my
peak
problem
Snipes.
with Passenger 57 is it was a fun movie, but it's too short. It's like 80 minutes. It's not even it doesn't even reach the 90-minute mark. And it
You're not gonna get me to agree with that, man. Give me my only complaint with Die Hard. You could probably trim 12 minutes from it, and it would be okay. But
Where
man,
would you trim?
I
There's
love
nothing
it.
to trim.
I know it. That's true because nothing is wasted.
You're just the credits,
So
you're
then
saying.
number one, right? Exactly. Cut out the credits or roll them
There
faster.
you go.
So number one, and this breaks the mold because it's not on a plane. The others are all except for Die Hard 3 on a plane. Under Siege, I think it's the one that does it the best. And even and like you said, and I'm not a huge Steven Seagal fan. There are other Steven Seagal movies I'd like. I like Hard to Kill. That might be it.
Yeah, Under
But
Siege is
that's
my favorite Steven Seagal movie, no question about that.
Under Siege is exceptionally done, and again, it's because of the villains, right? Between Gary Busey and
Tommy Lee
Tommy
Jones.
Lee Jones, it's fantastic. The two of them are great. The plan that the villains have to take over this naval vessel is fantastic. The sets, the way it's shot, the way it looks, it's great. And the fact that a lot of the extras and or side characters are the same dudes from The Fugitive, I enjoy that
Yeah,
too.
okay,
So
well that's
I
just because you have the
really
same director, so.
well, yeah, but it's still fun. So I really like Under Siege. So that would be the one that Die Hard on a boat instead of Die Hard on a
Have you ever
plane.
seen The
But yeah.
Package?
So those are my movies.
Have you seen The Package with Gene Hackman? Because that's also Andrew
Yes.
Davis, and they also tons of same characters, some tons of same actors. They're
Okay.
all like the Chicago actors, you know.
I feel like I yeah, it's all the Chicago crew of people.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
Excellent.
so there you go. That's my
Cool.
list. I mean, that's a tight list,
Yeah.
and they all kind of fit together.
Very tight
So
list.
yeah.
Very nicely done. I think of those, the only one I really probably should rewatch is Passenger 57, since I've seen all the others recently. Passenger 57, it's just too short for me. That's what comes up.
It won't take you any time to rewatch
That's
it.
true. That's true. Good point. Good point. All right, Jeanette, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
You can find me on all the socials. I'm out there in the interwebs. Honestly, I've been most active on Instagram lately because I find it the easiest to deal with because it's I can post and be gone. So I'm at j.y.ward on Instagram, and then I'm at Jeanette Ward on most of the other things. And my site is then jwardadventures.blogspot.com, where I keep my movie reviews, which I plan to get back on top of. The last couple of months I've been very busy, so I'm a little behind. But yeah,
All
there you go.
right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yay!